Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker. Now up on TSN 2, Brian Hayes, Jonas Siegel of The Athletic. Leafs Islanders tonight. Raptors back home in action tomorrow night. And TJ Brody will not go tonight. We've been talking about it all week, really since the trade deadline. And you've been on the show a lot, Jonas. The blender's been out a lot for Sheldon Keefe.
Yeah.
And you still have 13 games to go. I don't think it's mandatory after tonight you lock in a lineup. Originally, I thought you need about 5 games.
That seems light.
It seems light. Yeah. I think at some point by the end of this week.
Yeah. Final 10.
Final 10 you want to lock in.
Yeah.
And if you need a placeholder for where O'Reilly's expected to play, then so be it. Like, allow the wingers to figure out who they are, what they're going to be. It's a lot of moving pieces. And really, the only thing that has been consistent for the most part when they have had 12 forwards is Aston Reese with Kampf and Achari. Like, that fourth line,
yeah,
he's showing his hand on that. He likes that line. I like that line as well.
Sure.
But everything else is moving. You got Bobby McCann up tonight. You got Nylander on a line with Lafferty and McCann. You got Matthews playing with Kerfoot and Yarncroke. You got Marner trying to spark Tavares. Bunting's moved around a lot.
Yeah, and in some ways I like it because you're kind of preparing for every different situation, who goes cold, who gets hot. But at a certain point, like, you kind of want to start building some chemistry, some continuity. Like, we don't know who's going to play with Matthews, which is weird to say at the end of March. You know what I mean? Well, but just like a little bit more, I don't know.
I think they need cohesion.
That's the word.
Right? Yeah, because I don't think this was necessarily surprising. You bring in 6 new veteran players.
Yes. From 4 different teams?
From many different teams, and you send a couple of guys out who are everyday guys in Engvall and Sandin.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, again, you're talking established players. You're talking O'Reilly, Achari, Luke Shen. Like, guys who are going to come in and kind of demand a place in the room, and they're not sitting at the front of the bus. Like, these off-the-ice changes are impossible to predict and quantify, you know, how much of an effect they have, but they do have an effect.
Yeah.
You know, like, we talked about it last week, I think, with Patrick Kane, the idea of him going to New York, and all he's known is Chicago. All he's known is the same bus, is the same plane, is the same room, is the same plans on the road, who you go to dinner with, you know, where you live, the track to the rink. And that's uprooted, and it's just different. And this is, you know, times 6, really, if you're looking at the Leafs. I'm not saying that these guys have the impact that Kane is going to have. But it was a message. Like, it's a different vibe around that room today than it would have been 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. But it's just like different little reverberations, like even on the penalty kill. Now you bring in Achari, and suddenly, like, Achari's going out there sometimes as the third man up.
Mm-hmm.
So that means those minutes change a little bit for Kerfoot, which means they change a little bit for Yarncroke, which means they change for Aston Reese. And suddenly, like, your role is just a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And you multiply that, like you're talking about, throughout the lineup on D. Like, they get Shen and Gustafson. Suddenly, first game, those guys are available. Who comes out of the lineup? Timothy Liljegren. And then it's Hall, and now, you know what I mean? It's just creating, like, a lot of different ripples, and you get why they want to keep people involved. But at some point, the playoffs are almost here.
Like, right.
You kind of want to know what your team is, and I'm sure in the back of their mind they think they do, but you want to build.
Yeah, I think to be fair to the Leafs, I'm sure they have a pretty clear idea of what they think will be the best lineup, like what that will look like.
I don't know how they could.
Because they have to. It's their team. Like, if they don't have that answer, then they're in big trouble.
Why? Yeah.
Because I think, again, it's that they don't have to give you the answer right now. They have 13 games left. They don't have to.
But all the playing around tells me that they don't necessarily know. Like, they get Jake McCabe, and they say, you know what, we're going to try him with TJ Brody. We want to see if that can be our Muzzin Brody. And then that they play that for, like, 3, 4, 5 games.
Right.
It doesn't totally work. The numbers are bad. And then they move away from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't necessarily know that they know.
Well, they may not be 100% committed, but I think they have an idea of what they think it should look like, or what they believe the best combinations will be. That could change. But even last year, like, Brody and Muzzin didn't play together all year.
No.
Then they got to the playoffs, and all of a sudden they were the guys.
Yeah. True.
Fair. Right. So that was something.
Go back to that series. Like, Kerfoot started that series with Matthews and Marner. Bunting was hurt.
Right.
And then Bunting wasn't right the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, like, some of it is going to be performance down the stretch. O'Reilly coming back. I like O'Reilly with Marner and Tavares. Mm-hmm. But like Mike said, it doesn't seem like that's what they might be thinking, but who knows?
But that, yeah, that one they haven't really given a clear-cut answer on. Like, and nor again, nor should they, nor do they have to, but they're going to show their hand at some point in terms of what they believe is the optimum lineup, you know, optimal lineup going into the playoffs, and it's going to happen rapidly. It's going to happen quick. So we got the final of the World Baseball Classic tonight. Again, I think in terms of a baseball purist, and especially if you're Rob Manfred and you're looking for what is the best case scenario, international baseball, domestic baseball, it's USA versus Japan. Two biggest baseball markets in the world in terms of the amount of people, in terms of the amount of players, and the idea that Ohtani's facing Trout in a meaningful game, the first time they've played a meaningful game on American soil, and naturally not going to be in an Angels uniform, I think says a lot about their history. But it's going to be fun tonight. I'll admit, I was not a big fan earlier. I just wasn't interested. It wasn't that I was against it. But as the tournament has gone on, it's captivated my interest. And to chat about it, we're joined now by former MLBer, host of Baseball is Dead podcast. He's out on NBC in the Bay Area as well. Here's Dallas Braden back on Overdrive. How you doing, Dallas?
I'm doing well, boys. How you doing?
Doing well, man. We're gearing up for a night tonight. And I'm curious, you know, how you're a baseball fan through and through. Have you been pot committed to the World Baseball Classic from pitch one? Or has it been a buildup for you? And what's your overall experience been like so far?
Well, I've been locked in since pitch one of yesteryear. I mean, the first time they rolled this thing out, the idea, and you touched on it, the idea of international baseball. You know, we've got a lot of casual soccer fans, footy fans, if you will, here in the States. Me, hand up, I've been a lifelong soccer fan since last year. And anytime the World Cup rolls through, you get pumped up about it, right? Why? Well, yep. It's red, white, and blue. It's America. And I couldn't tell you the names of the positions on the field. I don't know who's playing. I don't care. But I will go to bat for you and die for you if you're an American soccer fan, right along with you. You know, if you let me, just because that's what we're doing here. That's what's going on. So now it's baseball. And baseball is my sport. Baseball is our sport, if you will. So now we're talking about international competition, the world stage, and it's my sport. I do know some of these positions. I do know a couple of these guys. I could talk to you a little bit about what's going on. So now I am all in. You want to talk about pot committed, bud? Shipping a chair is all I ever needed when it came to the WBC. All in blind. Believe it.
Well, and again, the States against Japan, man. I think U.S. against Mexico would have been incredibly cool, too. But that was an unbelievable game last night. And, of course, it's Ohtani that's driving it. You know, in the ninth inning, he gets the rally started. And then after the game, because he's a unicorn, Ken Rosenthal asking him, are you willing to pitch? Like, are you prepared to pitch tomorrow night? Oh. And, he, of course, he's like, yeah, I'm coming in. He's coming in relief tonight. And we've been talking about this all day. Is there a pitcher versus batter matchup that you want to see more than Ohtani versus Trout?
No.
It's just immediately no, right? It has to be that.
This is what we were talking about on our podcast, Baseball is Dead. Download, subscribe. This is what we were talking about when we first started talking about the WBC is, could you imagine if we get to the final stage and it's Trout, Ohtani? Maybe Ohtani on the bump because there were question marks. Could this dude take the ball again in the WBC? I don't know. It might have just been a 1-2-time deal, and that's it, kind of getting ready for the regular season. Well, Ohtani said last night, I will be prepared. I will be well prepared to pitch. And what he really meant was, I will be prepared to die on the baseball field wearing Japan across my chest. And if I got to do it against Mike Trout, my teammate, so be it. That's how, I mean, you could see last night in the dugout, there was a shot of him when they go up when they fall behind, and Ohtani's just like, no, okay, that's fine. Now I got to strap it on. It's go time. So there was not a more anticipated hookup than Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani, game on the line. We're talking about the greatest baseball talent the game has ever seen in Shohei Ohtani with one of the greatest players the game has ever seen, will ever see in Mike Trout on the same team stateside, but now it's country versus country, your best, my best. It doesn't get any better than this. If you were to sell baseball to a group of gray men that just came out of the sky on their spaceship, this is the ticket. I'm selling them.
Dallas, I'm curious how you feel about Mike Trout's career. Like, it's been fun to see him in these kinds of games. I'm looking at his postseason career. He's played three games. Like, yeah. How do you think of his career? Like, he has been the best player for, I don't know, more than 10 years. And yet we have no playoffs with him.
Well, it's tough. You know, there's a guy in the NFL by the name of Dan Marino, right?
Yeah.
Herald passer, just incredible record setter in his day. Doesn't have the big one under his belt. And I don't think that takes away from who he is as a player or where he's at in the pantheon of quarterbacks in the NFL. But that's kind of one of the leading conversation points with Dan Marino is that, oh, well, he didn't win the big one. Well, still a pretty good QB. Mike Trout, he's been better than half the dead guys in the Hall of Fame, for, like you said, for the last decade already. So it's tough because you know how good he is. You don't want that talent to be squandered when it comes to, you know, America's pastime and the World Series and the playoffs and sort of how the legends grow and are created here in America. That's what the playoffs and the postseason and the World Series are all about. And that hasn't happened. So it's almost like everybody has to watch Mike Trout during the regular season and appreciate the homers in June when they don't matter because they're not going to matter in October because we don't see him in October. Well, that's all going away because you're getting what that October vibe is like right now in March.
With Dallas Braden, former MLBer, host of the Baseball's Dead podcast, World Baseball Classic Final tonight, Japan against the U.S. And Ohtani, once he gets through this, gets back into spring training, gets back into the season, this guy's inching closer to free agency. And I think it'd be great for baseball. It'd be awful for the Angels, but great for baseball if that guy actually got to the winter meetings next year as a free agent. If that happens, what kind of scratch do you think we're talking? And, you know, how many teams could possibly be involved because this guy's going to want more money than possibly anyone's ever been given?
Well, let's start with he deserves more money than anybody's ever been given. Mm-hmm. We can start there. And I'll say this. 6 years ago, 7 years ago, I was laughed at when I talked about guys earning $40 million a year in short bursts, teams capitalizing on the front end of contracts, and being willing to go big money, big time, because they were going to be able to wiggle around some of the nuance of what they're allowed to spend, right? Labor tax, things like that. And here we are. We've got arms and hitters making $35, $40 million a year. So when you're talking about what Ohtani does, the idea of his contract and what it could look like is going to be a case study in economics classes in the Ivy League institutions all across this country. Because how do you prepare, how do you account for a guy who is worth $250 million on both sides of the ball? How do you do that? We don't know. And it's going to be really fun to watch how these teams try to do it. Could you imagine taking Shohei Ohtani into an arbitration hearing where we have to tell you how bad you are, how big of a detriment you are to our team? Imagine what that conversation would be like. So now here we are talking about, do we sign this guy up for the next 10 years? Do we sign him up for the next 15 years? Is there any way that we can get him to guarantee like DNA and lineage? And is there, how do we lock this guy up for life? And there's going to be a lot of, well, if he only hits for X amount of years, this is where the money goes. If he's only able to pitch, then this is how the money gets doled out. And there's going to be benchmarks, like I said, that have to be hit. There's going to be activations in place that allow him to make X amount of dollars, but it is going to be easily, in my opinion, the most lucrative contract in North American sports history.
Well, what do you think, like, if it gets to a point where he's, I don't know, 33, and you had to pick, he can only be a hitter or he can only be a pitcher, how do you pick?
I mean, the only reason I'm going to say that is so tough is we're talking about a guy who has shown the ability to be elite. We're talking top three.
Yeah.
At both of those. And so think about Justin Verlander. How old is that fella? 39, 40 mm-hmm. years old?
Mm-hmm.
That can Tommy John. And if you didn't have an age next to Justin Verlander and you were just looking at his pitch metrics, you know, the anatomy of his stuff, spin rate, I mean, just velocity, all of these things tell you that it's as good as it's ever been almost. And that's at 39, 40 on the tail end of a second Tommy John. So it really is all about the snowflake, meaning the individual because no two are alike. And so if it's about Ohtani's ability to continue to drive in runs and be a power threat, but the split is no longer what it is because the fastball is no longer what it is, but it's still viable, who knows? Could we see him start to carve out a niche in the bullpen where he's only coming out for two innings at a time but still serving as the everyday DH? Does he hop over at first base? I have no idea. But these are things that you have to have the conversation about because this is a one-of-one unicorn.
Yeah, it's, and you're right. I mean, this guy could still be doing this for another decade. Like, if he's still rocking at this, even if he gives you 5 years, like, his profile, I saw it today, I think he just started up Instagram. He's already got 4 million followers. It's more than anyone else in baseball. No one's close.
Yes.
Like, nobody's close. He's the man.
Randy Arozarena. I mean, the WBC has been incredible for the game of baseball, for individuals in baseball. Randy Arozarena has almost doubled or tripled his Instagram following just because of his, I mean, how about that catch, right? Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Bring that ball back, just sort of teasing everybody, pose up, cross the arms, and he's just out there making friends in between innings, pitching changes. Yes, I'll sign your ball, I'll sign your baby, throw the kid over the fence, I'll catch it. Like, he's doing it all. But, I mean, it has been such a wonderful event for the game of baseball. And I do want to say this. Kudos and hats off to the countries who have baseball leading their sport charge, leading their international stage. They and their passion for the game are what I tell the stories about when I'm trying to attract folks to the international game of baseball. I constantly talk about winter ball and have been forever because this is a passion and a love for this game that we just don't see and we don't experience. You know, I heard somebody say it's baseball with spices as opposed to just being served two scoops of vanilla on your regular cup.
Well, how about that cat on Japan last night hitting 100 on the clock? Like, what was it?
This guy's ridiculous. I mean, think about this, all right? We're talking about Ohtani and what this guy's capable of. You got Sasaki blowing 102, 20-plus fastballs, all of them logging 100-plus miles an hour, okay? I know you guys remember Kerry Wood, the 20-strikeout game.
Oh, yeah.
Bill James had a statistic, the game score, right? You could rate the games. And 105 was the game score for Kerry Wood's 20-strikeout game, one-hit, 20-punch-out game. 105 was the game score. The highest rated game ever in the history of baseball. Well, Sasaki threw a perfect game with 19 punch outs. That game, 106 game score. The highest graded game ever played, ever produced by an individual. And then he backed it up with 8 more perfect innings. Dude had 17 perfect innings at one point in time. Set a record, struck out 13 dudes in a row. That's the kind of animal that Mexico was dealing with last night.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was
and
wild.
The gap between the talent in the Nippon League and Major League Baseball is no longer as great as it was. Guys are coming over and not only coming over and surviving, but they're having success and being instant impact kind of guys. And there's a list of guys that are getting ready to make more noise.
There's no question about that. And again, tonight there'll be another chapter written, and people are looking forward to it, ourselves included. Obviously, you are as well. He is Dallas Braden, former MLB host of the Baseball is Dead podcast. And we always appreciate you finding time for us, Dallas. We'll do it again soon. Thank you, buddy.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Thanks for thinking of us. USA, let's go, boys!
Good luck tonight. There he is, Dallas Braden. Yeah, Sasaki, man. He was, like, watching it live, because watching it on TV, it doesn't do justice. You can't tell the difference between 97 on the gun and 100 on the gun, but you trust the technology that is legitimately what he's putting up, and every pitch was 100, 101, 102, 100, 101, 102. He finally hit like 97 or something, which was a changeup. Basically, you throw 97 after you've been throwing 101, 102, that's a changeup.
I didn't realize how young he is either. I think he's 21.
He'll be coming over, right? Like, people.
What's that going to cost?
People will be paying.
I think
Dallas
is right. It's going to be like half a bill.
For Ohtani?
Yeah. Because how do you.
Yeah.
How do you. Don't you have to pay him as both?
I think you do. Well, like he said, if it's 250 for one, 250 for the other, do the math. The thing is, him as a hitter alone
would be like three.
Is at least three, the way he can hit. Furthermore, his brand value
Yeah.
Like the idea of having Ohtani in Japan, everything I hear about it is he is so much bigger than everything else.
Yes.
He is massive. Like when they had the Olympics there, I was talking to guys coming back. Festruck, I think, was the one that was telling me. He's like, it is Ohtani everywhere. You step off the airplane, it's Ohtani. You every commercial is Ohtani, Ohtani, Ohtani. Like, I think Matsuyama, obviously, when he won the Masters, that was big over there. Sure, there's other athletes, clearly, but Ohtani is on a different level. So you're getting that market. If he's wearing your jersey, that thing's selling like hotcakes in Japan. That's worth so much money.
Yeah.
So much money. All right, Leafs Islanders tonight. We'll keep teeing that up. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by FanDuel later in the hour. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif will be in studio. And Lou Marchwinner, one of the great Canadian football players of all time. We're looking forward to catching up with Laurent. We'll do that next. All right, the Leafs are on Long Island tonight. You can watch that on TSN. Hear it right here on TSN 1050. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by FanDuel later in the hour. But we got a Lou Marchwinner in the house. Jonas, we got one of the most popular Canadian athletes going, one of the best football players our country has ever produced. He's got a lot on the go, too. He's in town. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif is joining us in studio. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
We're doing very well. We've been looking forward to having you in, man. It sounds like you're a busy guy.
I mean, it's just good to be here. I love Toronto.
You love Toronto?
Oh, yeah. It's good to be here. The food is incredible, so it's good to be down here.
Is that right? See, from someone in Montreal, I find...
food is good in Montreal, too. It's good everywhere. You know, I'm 320 pounds, so
right.
Food is good everywhere.
Yeah, see, I think one of the biggest battles in the country, bagels in Montreal compared to bagels in Toronto. Like,
Montreal bagels win.
I think so, too.
We don't really have, like, a distinct bagel in Toronto, do we?
I think we're going to say bagel in New York, but
yeah,
bagel
yeah,
in Toronto.
Right. Bagels in New York. You're right, but there are a lot of great bagel spots in Toronto.
I guess a lot of them are, like, Montreal
bagels. I guess we're kind of ripping off Montreal from that standpoint. There's, you know, poutine, obviously, in the province of Quebec. Like, I don't know, man. It's interesting you say Toronto. Like, great restaurants, for sure.
Great restaurant, great Caribbean food.
Yes.
Great Korean food.
Yes. A lot of multicultural type of dishes
that's
here.
That's what I like. You know, I like to travel. I like to taste different things.
Right.
So.
Well, you were in New York this year. I mean, you're Kansas City, known for the barbecue.
Yeah, Kansas City is known for the barbecue, but I was not in New York. I was actually in Morristown, New Jersey, which is an hour and a half away from New York. But it was good. It was good. I'm glad I went back this year.
It's that far out? Like, the stadium is that far out of, like, Manhattan? It's an hour and a half?
It's like 30 minutes outside of Manhattan, but the actual training facility is, like, an hour away.
That's wild. Yeah, because, I mean, what's, like, the Jets and the Giants, like, you both share it. We'll fight for New York. It's the biggest market you could possibly have. Yet it sounds as if you guys are really kind of detached from New York.
We are. And honestly, I'm sure it's the biggest market, but, like, when you look at it, it's really different than Kansas City. Like, Kansas City, everybody, like, breeds Chiefs, but when you look at New York, it's like if you're winning, guys are going to show up to the game. But if you're not, it's hard. Like it's like you're one out of like 11 venue that people can go to.
Right, with the Yankees and the Knicks and
even the Devils.
You know? Right, especially in Jersey, absolutely, and they're playing well now. Do you buy into this theory that if Aaron Rodgers ends up there, he's going to have some issue with New York and the media, and it's like, there's this belief that, like, because Green Bay, you've played in Green Bay, it's probably closer to Kansas City than New York. Like, it's a small market, and everything's Packers, 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 where there's a theory that maybe, you know, because of his nature and the way he can get a little bit snarly with the media, that New York might eat him up. Do you buy into that theory?
I think he has too much experience and too much under his belt to be eating up by the media, but... I think it's going to be interesting. Like, it's for sure going to be different than like Zach Wilson, you know, in terms of like media presence. But I think it's something that could be interesting in terms of like bringing some veteran presence at the quarterback position and see what happens. You know, because we have a good team. We had a good team last year.
Right.
When you look at the number one rookie of the year with Sauce Gardner, and then you look at like Garrett Wilson, we got tons of talent, and it's just a matter of like bringing people together and finding a way to win.
Right, because that kept coming up. Like, top five defense, you had the offensive line, you guys, before Breece went down, you guys had the run game.
Yep.
Like how frustrating.
I thought you were going to say before you showed up.
Right, because you got there. No, you got there and you factored in big time, right? You factored in
hopefully,
big time.
Hopefully. I love the run game. I love running the ball.
Right. Yeah. So we have Laurent Duvernay-Tardif in studio. So what? Take us through, like, how you approach football now, because... you know, you've got a book coming out. A big part of your life over the last few years has been the medical field. When you won the Lou Marsh, a big part of that was, look what this guy's doing with his, you know, personal life, professional life, giving back to the community, putting a pause in your NFL career.
Yep.
So how are you balancing, you know, your personal life, your medical career, and the passion that you have for that, and also continuing to play football at the highest level?
Yeah, and the passion for football, because football is, of course, a passion as well. I think for me, it's like, after the Super Bowl, there was that thing called a pandemic, right? So and I decided to go back and help on the in long-term care facility. And I promised myself I was going to go back and try to play again. And I did. I showed up in Kansas City. I broke my hand. And at some point, it was like, I think the team kind of moved on. And I love Kansas City to death. I love Coach Reed. But it was just a better fit for me to try to go somewhere else. So I ended up in New York. And I started like 8 out of the 9 weeks that I was there. And after that, I got offered some jobs. But for me, it was time to like prioritize medicine a little more. Like, I've been in the NFL for 9 years. So I started residency last July. And then next thing you know, the phone started ringing in October, and I knew the Jets offense. So I was like, yeah, I'll go back for one last ride with the Jets and see what happened after that. So I think I put myself in a position to be like kind of a good backup if somebody need me at some point. But I'm not really pursuing free agency at this point. I think it's time for me to just focus on medicine.
Okay. So, but that could be a part of your future. Like, let's say in October,
I mean,
the Jets call
no.
up.
It's hard to say no, right? If I'm in good football shape, I'm for sure going to consider it. For me, at this point, it's more a question of, like, which team can bring me as close as possible to winning a Super Bowl again.
Right.
And it's not a question of money. It's just a question of winning. Because winning is it's the greatest feeling in the world. Like, to be, you know, on a field with 80,000 people and just yelling as loud as you can, and you can't even hear yourself yell. It's unbelievable.
Did the pandemic allow you to appreciate that more? Like,
oh,
with,
yeah,
you know, being isolated, being at home, like.
Yeah, and for me, like, the last public event that I had before the pandemic was the parade in Kansas City.
Wow.
You know, a million plus people in the street. And then you go from that to quarantine, you know, at home with a curfew at 8 o'clock. I know it was brutal for everyone, you know, it was tough, but I feel like something was taking away from me to some extent, because you don't get a chance to experience like all the celebration around winning the Super Bowl.
Of course. Yeah. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif is in studio. So your memoir has been published by HarperCollins Canada. It's entitled Red Zone, From the Offensive Line to the Front Lines of the Pandemic.
Yep.
You know, your story was very well publicized. Again, like, we had you on. I remember we had you on a couple of times when you're in Montreal. But what might people learn about this journey and, you know, football, medicine, that maybe we don't know about? What will we find in the book?
You know what? I started thinking about writing this book while I was working in long-term care facility, because I was seeing so many things that I was like, it's not the time to talk about. And all we were portraying in the media was the negative stuff, but I felt like there was so much positive stuff going on inside the buildings, you know? And that's when I started writing some stuff down, and all those people that kind of, like, for me, were like the symbol of, like, leadership, of teamwork, and I wanted to, like, highlight those people as well. So I talk a lot about that. I talk a lot about synergy and differences between football and medicine and the transition from one another. And how, you know, teamwork and leadership are there in both spheres, but in different ways. So I think it's more kind of a reflection on, yes, winning the Super Bowl, yes, the contract, the signing, the draft and everything, but it's more on what does it take to be a great team player, whether it's in medicine or football.
Yeah, and in terms of, you know, you talk about what was being reported on. Like, a lot of it was our health care system, and will it stay intact? And is there, you know, when are the vaccines coming? Like, it was a wild time. But are you saying, like, what kind of caught your eye was the amount of people that gave their time, the amount of people that were committed to civic duty? Like, that must have been very motivating for you.
It was, and I was not alone. Like, I was part of a movement. Like, thousands of people went back in long-term care facility, retired nurses, doctor, teachers, and they went back to help. And that's beautiful. Like, and we got to celebrate that to some extent. And I feel like, yes, we were talking about the frontline worker, but it was like a general term. Like, and for me, it was important to also highlight those specific moments where people were like, that's the definition of a hero. It's somebody who's willing to do the hard work and the sacrifices without the big spotlight on yourself. And that's why I think those people deserve a lot more credit, because they've been doing it for the past 25 years than me, who just showed up and did it for a year, you know?
Sure. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif in studio. So the importance of self-care and well-being, that's a big part of what you're talking about and what you're portraying, whether you're in Toronto or Montreal or wherever you happen to be. So I'm sure you found that it was a priority for you as a professional athlete before the pandemic, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of what the average person can learn from your message, like, what are you trying to get out in terms of, you know, your experiences and the importance of self-care, well-being, et cetera?
Honestly, I think for me, it's a little bit paradoxical, but health and well-being is not only just about performance. And sometimes we portray it as like, oh, the professional athlete is healthy. Like, we're not that healthy, you know? We put so much stress on our bodies, yeah. Right? So it's more a question of balance. It's more a question of, like, being in a good state of mind. And we learned so much about mental health as we were going through a pandemic. And it's like, there's a ton of different ways to, like, maintain and cultivate that healthiness in general, you know? And physical activity is a part of it. Nutrition is another part of it. And that's why we do so many programs with kids in my community, with my foundation. It's to try to educate people that it's not only about excellence, it's also about just being part of a movement.
Right. Like, I've always wondered that with offensive linemen. Like, how many calories are you guys taking down, like, daily? Like, in terms of just, like, what you're eating every day during the season?
I got that number. I'm not sure if it's accurate, but it was around, like, 6,500 calories a day or something like that.
So what would you eat before a game?
Everything. No, but, like, for me, it was always the same thing. Whether we were playing a night game on Thursday night or it was at a noon game in Kansas City, it was always like big bowl of pasta, get your broccolis and sauce. And
so, like, 8:30 in the morning, you're saying that's what you're eating?
Yeah. For me, like, performance and playing well is a big part of it is your routine and how you get ready for the game. And the way Coach Reed was doing thing in Kansas City, he would always start the routine at 5 o'clock the night before the game. And it was always the same meeting, always the same cut up. Always watching the same film, always eating the same thing, and driving to the stadium 3 hours before the game. And by the time you show up to the stadium, you're already like...
The engine's gone.
Yeah, exactly. So you're not anxious about getting there because your routine started the night before. And I thought that was genius.
Yeah, Andy Reid, man, like, he is... he's something else, isn't he?
He's a hell of a coach.
Yeah, he really is. Like, how much do individual players... How much access would you get to Andy Reid's time? Like, you'd go through the offensive line coach, you'd have the offensive coordinators, like the head coach of a 53-man roster. How often are you sitting there talking with Andy Reid?
A practice in Kansas City on Wednesday and Thursday was around maybe 60, 65 snaps. And Coach Reid, for every single one of those snaps, was behind the huddle, listening to the call, listening to how Patrick was, like, spitting out the words, and then being able to, like, he was able to correct a wide receiver in terms of, like, oh, you should pivot that way versus X coverage or whatever. And then he would look at me and be like, hey, Frenchie, when you pull, make sure you get enough depth with your left foot or whatever. It's crazy. That guy was able to see everything. And he's a big part of why I was able to combine medicine with football, because out of all the coaches that I met before getting to the NFL, he's the only one who said, like, if you're here today to talk about football, even though you got medicine, it's because you love football, instead of, like, questioning whether I was going to be able to integrate the playbook and blah, blah, blah. So, hell of a coach, yeah.
Mahomes, like, he is something else, man, and you would have seen him at a young age, and obviously you saw him at the peak, like, when you guys won that Super Bowl. What's he like to be around? Like,
he's a cool dude. Yeah. Yeah, when he got drafted, we had Alex Smith, and I loved Alex too. And everybody was like, oh, is he going to be, you know, the guy? And by the time after the first preseason game of his second season, we were like, oh, he's the guy, you know? And it's just an approach, you know? He was 22 years old, I think. And the way he walked up into a huddle, it's 3rd and 10. You know, your chance of converting are probably 15%.
Right.
And he's just like, we're going to get this done. And this is the play. And if they show cover two, I'm going to throw it to you, Trav. And break. And the confidence, it just inspired the whole offense and then the whole team. And he's a big part of why the Chiefs are winning, of course.
Yeah. For sure, man. He is a beast.
Is there something about him that we would be surprised to learn?
I don't know. I think he's more low key than you think. Like, he's a superstar, a world renowned star by now. Yeah. But I feel like he was able to, like, stay grounded play basketball with his O-lineman in the locker room. And he's just like, he's one of those guys that you want to play for, you want to protect for. Yeah.
Yeah, and the nature of Kansas City, like, it's funny because it's not New York, it's not L.A., it's not Chicago, but as you said, it's everything in Kansas City.
Well, it would be, like the Habs in Montreal. It would be the same.
Oh, it's different. It's different because Montreal is like 2 million people and the stadium is 20,000, right?
Yeah, right.
Kansas City is like 500,000.
Yeah, and maybe you're getting 70 in there.
And you got the 76 in there and it's sold out every game. And it's only 8 games. So like every, you know, football weekend in Kansas City, it's different.
And the tailgating and everything that goes with it.
Yeah, because of course there's no public transportation to go to the stadium.
Right.
You need 50,000 parking spot.
And Arrowhead's awesome. Loud, right, too? Yeah. But it, like, can you, I've always wondered that because, like, when you're on offense, it quiets down. But it can't possibly quiet down to the point where it's
pretty
like,
impressive. Like,
is it? Like, you can really tell the difference?
And when you play in London or, like, Mexico City where people are not used to that, it's like a constant cheering.
Right.
But when you play in Kansas City, it's like super quiet. And then it's like the loudest.
That's you got to appreciate like how smart the fans are and how much they get it.
Yeah, because they feel incredible. Like they belong and they feel like they can have an impact, which is crazy.
Absolutely. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, big beard guy.
Oh, yeah.
What's going on with the beards? What am I hearing here? Barber's Secret, Clarence Canada? What's going on here?
Oh, yeah. I've been working with Clarence for the past 3 years. It's a brand that I love.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling you earlier, you were talking about health. And for me, like, all of my partnership are related to health in some ways. And Clarence is a big part of it, too. You know, when you talk about skincare, you know, the skin is your biggest organ in your body. So you got to take care of it. And I started working with them for the past 3 years. We launched the Clarence Men Energy line together, and now we're launching the beard line, and it's really good product.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'm using the beard oil, but you should use the.
I gotta get that. I got the baby face going, man. Yeah, hook me up, please.
Have you ever had a beard?
I did early COVID, man. I was rocking a great beard too.
What happened?
I don't. It got to a point where I said I'm done. It was too much maintenance, I think.
Paradoxical, right? Because you shave every day.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. Is at the time I'm like, I got to keep this thing on point. The thing is about a shave, it's just, it's a whole, you don't think, you know, you're just, everything's
you can
coming
just
off.
Buzz it and keep it like we do. Like what's.
Yeah, you guys got quality beards, man. I got to be honest. You guys have quality beards.
Join the party.
I'm envious. I might grow it back. It takes me a while though. You look like you could shave that thing and by tomorrow night you might have that back.
Yeah. You know what? With the pandemic, with the N95, I had to shave it at some point and it grew back pretty quickly.
Yeah. See, that's big, man. It might take me a few weeks. And that's the thing. You get through that grind. Like, there's a 2 week period.
Yeah.
It's not good.
It's ugly. It's itchy.
Not good, man. It's not good. Yeah. Anyway, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, you're in town for a couple of days.
I'm leaving on Thursday.
Thursday.
Yeah,
okay, man. Well, thanks.
Gonna try to go to the Raptors game.
But they need you tomorrow night, man. That's a big game. Indiana in town. They got to get that win.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing well. So if you get down there, enjoy that, and good luck with all the stuff, the book, and you know everything that you're all about. We appreciate everything you're doing, and we appreciate you popping in studio. Thank you for this.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
thanks, man.
Great seeing you.
Yep.
There he is, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. All right, we'll come back with our best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Get to the Leafs Islanders tonight as well. You can watch that on TSN here, right here on TSN Radio. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Leafs Islanders coming up tonight. Pierre Engvall, potentially a revenge game. Potentially a revenge game.
Do you put money on the board?
It's a good question. I think you have to, don't you? I think players still do that.
Okay.
But I think if you're a guy who's been around the league for a long time, made a lot of money, it might be $5,000 up there, $10,000.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Engvall put up $500,000.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Maybe. But the Islanders have been playing pretty well. Like, Sorokin's a stud, man. He's one of the best goalies in the league.
Well, and you'd like to see the Leafs kind of start to put this together a little bit. Like, we talked about some of the numbers and all that stuff that's not looked great. And like you said, they've had, what did you come up with? Like, four games that you liked in the last 10, 12? Like, it's not been, and it's expected, right? Like, you mentioned all the new players, all the different combinations. But at some point, you want to start gearing up and playing your best hockey for the playoffs, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, listen, they did not play well in Ottawa. They were awful in Edmonton. Awful.
93 attempts they gave up.
Yeah, they were terrible, really, in Ottawa. The Buffalo game, they weren't very good. The Vancouver game, they weren't great. I didn't think they were awful in that game.
Started well,
finished poorly. But again, Seattle, Calgary, Edmonton at home, Carolina at home, that's a good game. I thought they played well that game.
Yeah.
You don't think they played well?
They're fine. I mean, they went ahead and then...
But that's what they've been doing. Like, they're getting leads, and then I think for the most part, against the quality teams, they've done a pretty good job of closing those games.
Yeah.
Like, this is where I have a different... Like, it's tough because, like, you rip them because they lose to Arizona. They rip them because... But then when they beat good teams...
It's saying this is, like, something to keep an eye on, that night after night after night, they're getting, you could say, outplayed. You could say whatever. Like, territorially, is that the right word?
Yep.
They're not controlling play like they normally do. So... just keep an eye on it. Like, there's not a lot of time left. Like, the playoffs start in less than a month.
Absolutely. Yeah, they got 13 games left. But they're still, what are they, 3 points up on Tampa with 2 games in hand?
Yeah.
That's a pretty comfortable position to be in. I think they probably end up against Tampa still.
Yeah,
which will likely determine what's going to happen. But I don't know. I think what they've built up is, for me, confidence that they're not going to just lose 4 or 5 in a row and be awful.
They're like, they're that team anyway.
Too good of a team.
Yeah.
And I do think, as much as it's difficult to believe because they haven't had that playoff success, this idea that they're bored with the regular season, but there may be an element to boredom with the regular season. Like that.
Fair.
That we apply that to Boston, we apply it to Colorado, we apply it to Tampa.
Especially when you can't win the division.
They can't win the division.
But you can win home ice.
Yes.
And you look at home ice, they're 25-7-5.
Pretty good.
Tampa is 25-7-5 on home ice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's imperative
to get it. You want home ice.
It is, but you don't start the season thinking home ice.
No, and it's like, hard to get up in March on a Tuesday or whatever. Oh,
like, that's
home ice tonight.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think there are legitimate things to pinpoint and look at and question or keep the team accountable for.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks where it's a bit up and down, I'm not overly concerned. I'm not, because I think these guys, they know they're playing Tampa.
Yeah.
They know it's just the regular season. They know it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
It's the human element. And it would be easier to accept if they had won a cup 2 years ago, if they went to a conference final last year. Because, again, it comes up all the time with Tampa. Like, ah, Tampa's bored. That's why they don't care. Yeah. Well, why would the Leafs? The Leafs should be even more bored with the regular season. They should be even more.
Because everyone's judging them on only the playoffs, right?
And I think they judge themselves on that. And they understand that they've just got to get there, they've got to be healthy, and then they got to have faith that they can turn it up.
Well, and to your point, I was trying to look at the schedule. Remember last year, it was like weeks before the playoffs, and they just got pumped by Tampa. And I'm looking, it was 8-1.
Mm-hmm.
And there were like all these alarms going off. And like, it didn't really end up mattering at
Listen,
all.
Listen, they win tonight 10-0 or lose 10-0. It has no bearing on what's going to happen come the playoffs.
But if for a month straight this continues,
yes,
then you're starting to think, well, what's going on here?
Right. I mean, listen, that... And I think they're too good for that to happen.
I'm with you.
I think there's 7 or 8 teams where that's just not applicable, and they're one of those teams.
Sure.
Our best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I like the Rangers at home against Carolina. That's going to be a great game, though. That's a big game, divisional game. They're fighting for position, and Carolina's at 98 points. Rangers have kind of played themselves out of it, but New York's won 4 in a row now. And I like the Rangers at home. Minor juice, -125. I like Tampa big in Montreal, though, tonight.
Good one.
By 2 or more tonight, paying -108. You got to pay a little bit of juice on that. But the Habs are going the wrong way. Like, it's like
by design.
Yeah, exactly, by design. But it was like Colorado against Chicago last night. You saw what was coming.
Yeah.
You know, I think Tampa, Montreal, if you're playing the Anaheims, if you're playing the San Jose's, like, if Edmonton had any goaltending last night, I think they win 5-2. But Jack Campbell couldn't get things done. Today's best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. So the match play beginning tomorrow, WGC match play. We'll be tracking that tomorrow. The Leafs obviously coming off a game tonight. You get the Raptors against Indiana tomorrow.
Is there anybody in tonight's Leaf game that you're kind of really curious to watch, you'll be keeping an eye on? Tavares, Nylander?
Yeah, I think Tavares back on the island is still a story.
Yeah.
You know, it's not what it once was, but it's still a story. And I think the idea of him breaking out, you know, and getting off the schneid here against his former team, I think would be suitable. So I'd look at Tavares. I think that line of Matthews, Yarncroke, and Kerfoot is kind of intriguing, keeping 34 buzzing. I think he's played really well recently.
Yeah, he's got it going.
Yeah, and then you got the WBC tonight as well.
Yeah.
That's going to be big, Japan versus the U.S. So a lot to break down tomorrow. All right, Jonas. Good stuff, buddy. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you. Did we decide who's going to be mayor? I think it should be you or O. I think it should be.
I think that's a horrible decision for the future of our city if it is one of the two of us. But,
maybe the two of you can do it together.
That's what I think it has to be. Joint package.
Two brains.
Yeah, you put both of it together. O's leading the vote at 48%.
Yeah,
that is terrifying.
Right.
That is terrifying. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.